Christy was still deeply unconscious. Mildred sat by her, chafing her wrists, dabbing a water-soaked rag on her white forehead. There had been no sign of life since Ryan had carried her into their cabin, placing her on the bed with infinite gentleness. And that was nearly 4 hours ago. Any change?
Not really. Her respiration's better than it was, and the pulse has slowed some, but she's still way out of it.
Jack stood in the open doorway, staring out over the settlement. Sister Sprite's body had been dragged away by half a dozen of the armed men, her heels digging twin furrows in the soft earth.
Nobody moving out there.
Doc was propped up on one elbow on his bed, sipping at a mug of hot water and honey held for him by Mildred, who had left Christy for a moment. He had managed to stop coughing for several minutes, but he still looked desperately frail. Christy lay on the adjacent bed, her eyes tight shut. Mildred had been seriously worried at first, but now was more optimistic. She knew that her friend had been drained while using the power of the Earth Mother, and the time and rest would probably see her recovered in a few days.
I'd like us to be away from here as soon as possible.
Me too. But what do you reckon happens next?
No idea. You?
JB pushed back the brim of his battered fedora and shook his head.
Bones might fall either side of the line. By their rules, we all pass the testing.
Except for you, me, Dean, and Doc.
Jack moved back from the doorway and turned to Ryan.
Baron's coming. Alone.
A shadow fell across the floor, and Brother Joshua Wolf walked into the hut.
Good afternoon, Outlanders. How is Sister Roth?
She'll be just fine. How are the Burrows boys?
Shaken. Got the wise woman to give them some sleeping herbs. Set the brakes. Should help. We have to do some talking about the rest of the testing.
Hadn't you had enough? You want everyone in the Ville chilled?
Wolf stared at Jack and started stroking the stump of his amputated arm.
Race isn't over until the fat lady crosses the finish line, kid.
Don't call me kid.
Right.
What happens next? What do you want the rest of us to do for our testing?
Well, in all fairness, the boy's not of age, so he's excused. And I've seen enough of both of you personally to know that there's no need for you to face any trial. You are two of the most dangerous men in all the Deathlands. There's no need for you to be tested.
So, it's over.
No.
No?
I'm deeply regretting this, old friend, but it isn't quite over yet.
Doc suddenly sat up, his pale eyes blinking open, and stared directly at Joshua Wolf.
Just send my mail to the Tijuana jail.
Doc pushed the mug of water aside, closed his eyes, and lay back down. Mildred laid a cool hand on the old man's fevered forehead, wincing at the heat.
Not good at all. Wish the temperature would go down. That would set him on the road to recovery. Still with rest.
What do you mean it's not over yet, Wolf?
Well, friend, it's not who wins the first lap. It's who's first past the tape at the end of the race. Now, y'all did real well in the testing today.
What?
But you haven't all taken the trials. Still one of you left. Think I should send his formal invitation to the Tijuana jail?
Wolf looked down at Doc and smiled beatifically.
What? You're saying that this critically ill old man should somehow have to prove himself to the sick-brained bastards of Hopeville? You don't...
Wolf had the pearlized grip of his blaster firmly in his hand, the gaping barrel drilling into Ryan's abdomen.
One wrong step, One-Eye. That's all I want.
Jack had taken a half-step toward Wolf, his fingers groping for one of the concealed knives, and he barely halted the movement.
Test Doc?
Right. Test Doc. Couldn't have put it any more succinctly myself.
He's real sick!
That's absolutely correct, young man.
You really are something damned special, mister.
Why, thank you.
Wolf bowed low to Mildred. Ryan could have taken him at that moment, but they would still have been absurdly outnumbered by armed men, all within calling distance. He held himself in check, waiting to see how the cards fell.
I'm not a hard man, nor do I wish to be unfair. Blessed Jesus of the cap and ball wouldn't want that to happen.
Just what are you saying, Wolf?
Why, if he's unwell, we can postpone the testing.
For how long? As long as it takes for him to recover?
Oh, dear me, no. I'm afraid that won't work at all. Lady, we just don't have the time. Doc can have all the rest of today to recover and all of the coming night as well. He needn't face his testing until... Well, let me see. Until 11 tomorrow morning. No, why pinch the penny? Until noon.
Noon? Poor old guy will probably still be unconscious by then. Give him a week, and then he might, just might, be able to make a showing.
Tomorrow, noon. Best you don't leave the hut. Food will be brought to you.
Wolf holstered his gun, turned about, and marched quickly out of the cabin, leaving a shocked silence behind him. The shadows had lengthened around the bill. The great golden bowl of the sun slipped slowly out of sight, behind the final range of hills that separated the place from the endless stretch of the Pacific. Josiah Steele brought their supper, clearly uncomfortable, saying little. They'd been fed from a black iron cauldron of vegetable soup, thick with carrots and parsnips, served with fresh-baked bread and some tender roasted sweet potatoes. There was home-brewed beer on offer, but Ryan gestured for them all to reject it. Now they were left alone again. A bowl of the soup stood cooling on the small table under the window, in case Christy could be roused enough to try to sample it. The one slightly encouraging sign was that Doc had been able to sit up, with help from Ryan and Jack, and had sipped at his own helping of the steaming soup, licking his lips after three or four spoonfuls, before wearily lying down again. Now J.B. stood in the doorway, the setting sun flaring off the twin lenses of his spectacles. Ryan was sitting on the bed, holding Christy's limp hand. Mildred was lying on her own bed.
We have to get him well away.
The fates are against us.
You mean Christy's condition?
Sure.
She's been hit harder by it than I ever saw before.
When do you reckon she might be able to travel again?
Christy's about the strongest woman I've ever come across, Ryan. But she's not going to be up and walking for, at the most optimistic, 3 days.
If we just need to get back to the gateway?
Still, 3 days.
How about Doc?
Same. Think he's about turned the corner. If it came to it, he could maybe walk a short distance tomorrow evening. Not much sooner.
If we made a break tonight, me, Dean, and JB help Doc, and you and Mildred take Christy?
We don't know the country like they do, Jack. They got dogs, and there's the Apaches as well. One of them had hunt us down before we got 2 miles.
Jack got up from his bed and stood alongside JB, the dying rays of the sun turning his white hair to a mane of living fire. Ryan looked at the two slight figures side by side. His mind flashed back to the long years that he'd known the armorer, and the shorter time with the boy, all the desperate times they'd faced together. He wondered if they were all coming close to the end of the line.
You four could get away. Looks like a cloudy night. You'd be long gone into the forest before they even started to chase you. You'd move fast, a lot faster, without Christy or Doc to slow you down.
Dad, you can't mean that. I'm not going, and you can't make me.
JB and Jack both opened their mouths to speak, but Mildred was quicker.
In my time, Ryan Carter, we had a good saying. Go take a flying fuck at a rolling donut.
I'm serious. It makes sense.
Never reckoned to hear you say anything like that, old friend. There's times to walk away and times to stand. Trader used to say that. And you know what? He was right.
Tomorrow at noon, they'll find a legal way of butchering Doc in front of our faces. And there's nothing we can do to save him. Then they'll find some pretext for chilling you and me, JB. And then the others. Knife in the back, poison. Look, we don't all have to die.
Together. What goes down, go down together.
Uh-oh. Looks like we got more company.
The night was finally settling in, and Jim Owsley approached the hut, ostensibly to light the oil lamps for them. It was evident he'd also come for gloating. As he moved from lamp to lamp, he was hardly able to restrain his delight at their hopeless predicament.
Always said nobody likes a smartass, especially not muty black smartasses. All that winning just so you can end up losing.
Ryan casually reached over from his bed and rested his hand on the man's scrawny shoulder, letting finger and thumb bite together. He clipped the nerve ends of the muscle, making Owsley whimper with a sudden electric pain, making him drop to his knees on the chipped planks of the floor.
Hey, you son of a bitch! Didn't have to do that to me!
Ryan rose from the bed and stood over him.
Get out!
God damn! Just come to bring you light.
You did that. Now get the hell out of here.
Owsley got to his feet, crossed the room, and stood in the doorway. He paused and turned.
You should try and reckon on winning some friends, Outlander, because you're damn sure gonna need them.
Owsley reached outside of the door and grabbed something. It was Doc's ebony cane. He threw it onto the floor of the hut.
I've brung this for the old man.
I'd hate to see him have to crawl to the testing.
He barreled out and slammed the door shut behind him.
Mean little redneck Peckerwood. Wish I had my blaster with me now.
Wish we'd got a single blaster between us. One'd be a good start.
Ryan sat down on the bed again and picked up Christie's limp hand.
Talk's cheap, friends, and action costs. And time is passing us by. We've got the rest of the dark hours. Then it's done.
The conversation kept following the same circle. There was no hope of Christie being well enough to make a nocturnal run for it, so they all had to stay. But Doc was undoubtedly doomed if he was still in Hopeville at noon tomorrow. Mildred awakened Doc around 9, feeding him some oatmeal gruel that she'd gone and begged from one of the older women. She chafed his cold hands and legs, making him stand and move around, despite all of his protestations, keeping him walking around and around. Doc used his cane, leaning heavily on the silver lion's head handle as he built up his strength.
By the three Kennedys, madam, to so torture a wretched, dying old man, you must certainly be kin to Tomas de Torquemada, the cursed head of the hateful, hated Spanish Inquisition. Give me peace, I beg you.
Ryan bit his lip. Though the old man was much better than earlier, he still had the uncontrollable cough, and he was desperately frail. But he only had one option. Do or die.
Doc?
Dear boy.
What would you say to a little adventure?
All eyes in the room turned to Ryan. Doc's mind was never 100% sharp. Ryan tried to explain to him what was happening, what had happened, and what was going to happen. But Doc ended up more confused than when Ryan had started talking to him. There was to be a testing, he'd clued into that, but he still didn't quite understand what it would have involved, and why his presence in the bill would be seriously bad news. And Christie was ill. She'd had some kind of a fight, and she had won it. Doc understood that much. But it had made her very sick, so she couldn't travel.
All I'm asking you to do is get out of the bill without being seen or heard, and make your way back along the trail to hide in the ruins of Mom's place, where the rest of us will join you when we can. You think you're up to it?
There was a tense silence in the room. No one argued. No one raised objections. They all understood that the plan Ryan had outlined, no matter how far-fetched, was Doc's best hope. They all awaited his answer.
No, my dear friend. I cannot say that I'm up to it. But that doesn't mean I can't do it. Damn the torpedoes! Full speed ahead!
Ryan used some fragments of charcoal from the old fireplace to draw a rough map onto a torn linen rag, showing Doc where he thought the guards might be encountered. He showed him the route back in the general direction of the redoubt to the ruined restaurant, warning Doc to look out for the giant meaty rats.
And watch out for the Apaches, too.
No hay problema, mi amigo. May I remind you that I once spent a considerable amount of time with a tribe of Mescalero Apaches, and in truth, I speak a smattering of their language.
And Jack wants you to take one of the throwing knives he's kept hidden. You'll need more than just your sword stick out there.
Nonsense. Such a weapon would be as much use to me as a chocolate chamber pot, dear boy.
They sneaked Doc out of the back window of the log cabin in full dark, with only a sliver of moon visible through some drifting clouds. Once on the ground, Doc felt another cough prickling deep in his chest. He was still well within the settlement, only a scant 30 yards or so from their hut, when he was seized by a racking paroxysm. He hastily pulled out his blue swallow's eye kerchief and crumpled it into his open mouth, muffling and cutting off the noise. He crouched, feeling the damp of the sodden pine needles through the thin material of his ancient breeches, and squinted to try and spot the sentries that Ryan had told him would be patrolling. But he saw no one. Doc moved on when he'd regained some measure of control, having to stop only twice more before he was clear of the perimeter of Hopeville and out onto the winding trail. But he still had a long, dark night ahead of him. Ryan opened the door a crack, peering out into the first dim glow of the false dawn. A huddle of armed men stood by the dying embers of the main campfire, while half a dozen others were patrolling the perimeter of the ville. A thin coil of gray-white smoke rose lazily up between the branches of the enormous pines that lined Hopeville.
Shit's gonna be hitting the fan any minute now. We best all get up and ready.
Dean sleepily sat up. Like the others, he'd remained fully dressed.
How's Christy, Dad?
No change. She slept quiet. She hasn't recovered consciousness, but Mildred keeps checking her vital signs. Both respiration and pulse are improving.
Doc's been gone for just on 8 hours. Should be time enough for him to hole up someplace. Fingers crossed.
Three times during the night, Owsley had peeked in, checking that everyone was still there. Doc's bed was farthest from the door, and they'd made up a realistic-looking mound of blankets. Each time, the sick man had left, convinced that the companions were all there. Mildred was busily washing her hands and face in a large blue and white china bowl, using a large tablet of dark brown soap.
Ooh, cold this morning. I went to take a leak, must have been around 3, and there was a biting frost. It's not going to help Doc with his cough and all.
His cough could be the least of his problems. Uh-oh. Here comes Wolf and his men, taking their early morning check.
Good luck, Doc.
Doc had to keep reminding himself that he was supposed to be traveling light-footed. The temptation to use his ebony sword stick as a walking cane was very strong, but he realized immediately that it might make too much noise. He would have been a whole lot happier if he'd had his beloved Lama in the fancy hand-tooled Mexican rig on his hip. The forest was showing the first signs of the false dawn. The sky above had become fractionally brighter, throwing Doc's shadow on the winding trail. Twice he'd been stopped in his tracks, aware of something moving ponderously in the dark depths of the pines, but nothing had come near him, and he hadn't actually seen anything. He carried a gold half-hunter watch on a fob, and he tugged it out, angling the face to try to catch enough light to read it, but it wasn't yet possible. By his own rough calculation, he'd been traveling for 7 or 8 hours, and was well over halfway toward his destination. The one thing that Doc couldn't know was at what point his escape had been noticed. If luck was with him, he'd still have something of a clear run. If not, then the pursuers could already be closing in on his track. Doc was beginning to feel close to exhaustion. The attack of influenza, or whatever it had been, had taken even more out of him than he'd guessed. It was an effort to lift each foot and place it in front of the other. But he knew that if he stopped, he would likely fall asleep and not carry on at all. He tried to swing into a regular march, whispering the beat to himself.
Left, right, left, right, left, left. I had a good job and I left.
And on into the early morning.
None of you heard him go?
Nope. Reckon we were all totally bushed after the testing and all. Thought Doc was real sick. The old coot sure fooled us.
Owsley leaned close to the leader of the Children of the Rock and whispered something in his ear. Wolf listened intently, nodding a couple of times. Then he shook his head.
No, not yet. Just means a sort of delay in the plans. Best thing is to go after the old goat and bring him back here. Then things will be back on course.
But we...
No! You heard me, Brother Jim. We play this one like I said. Understood?
Wolf raised the fist of his unmutilated hand for emphasis.
If you say so.
I do. I say it with the backing of the blessed Lord Jesus, Savior of the gun and the blade.
Amen, Brother Wolf.
Wolf managed to claw a smile back into place. He pointed at Ryan.
A small and temporary victory, Outlander. Trader used to say that he who shoots last shoots finest, didn't he? Think about that, One-Eye.
We getting after the old man now, Brother Wolf?
Right now. Double the watch on the rest of them. Although Sister Roth doesn't look like she'll be going anywhere. Not for a while.